house and I needed to build a driveway, I came to the city and I said, well, would you build my driveway for me? Okay. I don't think the city would do that. But, you know, to claim that this is a blighted neighborhood, it fits the description of the TIF ordinance. Okay. When it's not. And it, I mean, that's, anyway. I don't know why you're reading that.
This is a two-part question, but a simple one. What's the total projected budget for this TIF? And the documents that Anne Maroney outlined, the TIF eligibility study and the redevelopment plan, when will those full documents be available to the public?
Okay. So in terms of the revenue, the district, we expect that the TIF plan, once in place, which has to be filed, I believe, in 3 weeks, would generate approximately $800 million in infrastructure. There would be funding available to pay for approximately $800 million in infrastructure needs.
Could you clarify what has to happen in 3 weeks?
Yeah.
We're finalizing the calculations for the plan as well as other pieces that go into the plan. Plan has to be finalized in between 2 and 3 weeks. So we have to file a plan with court. All the information, all the plan, all the maps, it's stamped and certified as the final plan.
So it's at that point that final plan will be available to the public,
correct?
And then the feasibility study, is that available to the public?
It's attached to the plan. It's not. It's still in draft form. It's attached to the plan at that point.
I wanted to point out that there were only 25 minutes allocated for questions. I think everybody here would like to hear all the questions of everybody in line. Hundreds of us came out here tonight. So, given that the meeting started late, please extend the courtesy to these people.
Yeah.
My name is Kayla Carter, and I'm with Friends of the North Branch Park and Nature Preserve.
Woo!
I've been with the 1.5 mile North Branch Industrial Corridor for the last 20 years, in effect, circling it. Within the last 3 years, since David Reifman stopped working for Tom Ricketts and was appointed commissioner of the Department of Planning and Development, we've seen a rush to wholly remake large swaths of the city. As Chicago Magazine wrote, quote, when the mayor inflected Reifman for this key city hall job, developers clinked their shovels in a toast. Mayor Emanuel and his commissioner quickly enacted an industrial corridor modernization initiative in which 12% of the land in the city, this is just the first of the framework plans to come along, 12% of the land in the city will undergo new zoning and allowances under a series of quote-unquote frameworks. The North Branch Industrial Corridor is just the first to undergo this revisioning and is setting a sorry precedent. Sweeping aside balanced planning to the interests of developers who are chomping at the bit to rake in money, residents have packed meetings begging for transparency and input in the massive rezoning that is the framework plan. But instead, they found obfuscation and concerted divide and conquer strategy. The DPD, for example, insists that the surface area of the Chicago River counts as quote-unquote open space. I'm speaking up tonight to ask that you listen to constituents citywide, not just in the North Branch corridor, but in each industrial corridor slated to undergo revision. I'm speaking up to tonight to ask that you slow down. Slow down. To allow the next mayor and the next commissioner of the DPD. I am speaking up to ask that the developer pick up the tab for additional infrastructure for which their own mega project is creating the need. I am speaking up tonight to demand that you answer the call for public space along the Great Chicago River, that you employ the same ratio of parkland to residents and planning standards that any other city would when reimagining a massive tract of land. Currently, there are 0 acres allotted for publicly owned parkland in this massive tract. 0 acres stretching from Grand to Fullerton. The tract is a mile and a half from the lake, or 1.5 to 2 miles from the lake. It's not within your perceived walk shed, which the DPD uses as one of its own metrics. I urge you to support the North Branch Park and Nature Preserve, a 24-acre park, which would allow you to start to scrape with the minimal open space standards for our community. I have a question about your slide and key infrastructure needs. We don't see the need for a park. Where is the park?
One of the functions of the proposed TIF is to act as a funding mechanism for the planning process, the implementation of the North Branch Framework Plan, which was obviously discussed at length over 2 years before.
Yes, I attended each and every single meeting.
So, I don't know, Eleanor, if you want to add to that.
Eleanor and I already talked about it before the meeting, actually. So, go ahead, where is the park?
Hi, it's Cos back to me again.
Yes.
So we hear you loud and clear. As we did talk outside, we understand, we see all your supporters here. This will be part of the discussions, as I explained, with Alan as part of the PDs that are going forward, as was laid out in the framework plan. The city does not have public land here now, so we will work in partnership with the community projects as they move forward.
The thing is, the entire tract is 760 acres. Currently, there is 0% owned by the public, but there's no plan to add to that. 760 acres.
But there is a plan, and what the plan asks for is over 60 acres of open space.
Counting in the surface area of the Chicago River, and also the setback 30 feet on either side of the
river. I'm sorry, you're asking me a question. So 60 acres of open space is outlined in the plan, and you can see we're already realizing it with the Wild Mile. The Turning Basin work is undergoing. We've approved 2 planned developments at the Tribune site, as well as the site across from the Tribune on Chicago Avenue. Both have open space plots that are over 50% of those sites, the net area.
As I've written to the DPD, the 60 acres is really a misrepresentation, because by zoning code, you're required to have a 30-foot setback on either side of the river.
I'm trying to answer your question.
I'm just letting you know, 60 acres is not what it seems. It's not publicly accessible. I'm not going to go play soccer on the river. On the surface area of the river.
As I was starting to say, we have 2 developments, planned developments, that have been approved. Those are online. I encourage you to look at those. They're already starting construction on one of those. Either side of Chicago Avenue, over 50% of those planned developments are publicly accessible open space, and that was not as part of the community.
As we know from the Blair Heyman article and also from personal experience, for example, Ricketts on his park in front of Wrigley, those publicly owned or privately owned, publicly accessible spaces don't always even stay open to the public. For example, you can't why is there this willfulness against smart planning?
Well, I appreciate your question. I think we've tried to address it. I don't think we're going to come up with an answer tonight.
Sure.
That suffices. I appreciate it. We can move on to the next question.
Good evening. My name is Tom Tresser, and I'm the lead organizer for the TIF Illumination Project at TIFReports.com. Now, we've been investigating and exposing the hyperlocal impacts of tax income and financing districts since 2013. And we've been called to present at 73 public meetings in front of over 6,300 angry people. The proposed TIF for Cortland and the Chicago River to subsidize development around the Sterling Bay's Lincoln Yard developments is the worst example of the public policy insults that TIFs bring to our city. Chicago is justifiably called Two Chicagos because of the lavish resources spent on the whiter, richer part of town and the historic neglect and abuse heaped on non-white communities. Now, at this time of terrible stress and duress for our communities of color, it is unsupportable, and I would say immoral, to deliver $500 to $800 million in public subsidies for the Lincoln Yards project. This development is bloated beyond understanding. Amazon HQ2 is not coming here. So why do we need so many office towers and residential towers right in the middle of our community? But if you want to build it, be our guest. But don't think that your ill-conceived plan demands a reflexive gift of hundreds of millions of dollars of public subsidies to make it work. We need that money elsewhere in this city. For more parks, for more inner schools, for special ed teachers, for example, for librarians or elementary schools, and for job training for our young people. My friends, we have seen this before. A last-minute announcement about a BS project that gets rushed to City Hall, you've seen the schedule, while we, the residents and taxpayers, protest in vain. So, if you want to put the skids on this immoral tiff, someone from the Second Ward is going to have to step up and run for alderman right now. The incumbent, Brian Hopkins, has already taken $6,000 in campaign contributions from DLA Piper, the cloud-heavy law firm that is doing the zoning work for the Lincoln Yards project. He was given $1,500 just in June. Now, he's unopposed for election next year, and the only way your collective voice of concern will be heard if one of you challenges Mr. Hopkins and makes this project your top issue. You need a minimum of 473 ballot signatures for your nomination papers, and you have till November 26th to deliver them. My name is Tom Tresser, and you can reach me at tom@tresser.com. That's tom@tresser.com. I'm ready to help you if there's a soul out there that's ready to step up. No tiff, no way.
Good evening. I'm Christine Hirsch. I've lived in the neighborhood for 32 years. I've survived seven alder people. I've been in three wards, same house, three wards, and have paid $500,000 in property taxes. Did you hear the number? $500,000. So in return for that, my child has gone to public school for 14 years, fabulous public schools on the north side. I'm grateful for the great fire and police and people that support us. But there will be no tip. My property taxes do not need to line the pockets of Sterling Bay and the Crown family. They're already billionaires. We need parks. You're not even looking at me. Moses. We need parks, green spaces. At one time, there were eight parks within walking distance. There are still eight parks in walking distance, but we're privileged. Won't the rest of the people in the neighborhood need parks? 60 acres of parks, no tip. We don't need to line the pockets of wealthy Chicagoans any longer. More parks, no tip, no more property taxes.
And I also happen to have grown up along Armitage Avenue and within walking distance of the 606. Since so many of the others have already said a number of the things that I would have said, I just want to bring a couple of points to add to that. First of all, a reiteration that we all know that the city finds money for the things it cares about, including parks, and it is very telling that in opening this meeting and talking about the public infrastructure that is proposed to be paid for through this TIF, parks were not mentioned. Shame on you. Sterling Bay, and it is 1,000% clear that all of the green space that they talk about, which is much less than the open space that they talk about, is privately owned public space. And in a city where black people get killed for walking down the street, I would personally hate to be a black kid with a hoodie sitting on privately owned public space at the wrong time of day. We need public parks. And when we ask them the same kinds of things that we've asked the Obama Foundation, for example, who says over and over that their campus will be public, we ask, so if I want to have 75 people come to my family reunion in your public park, how would I do that? Because the Chicago Park District lets me do that. And like they said to us, Sterling Bay said, we have no idea. We hadn't thought about that. So Chicago is not delivering public parks to us by giving us privately owned green space. That does not live up to the accountability and accessibility of the Chicago Park District standards. As much as we like trails and bike paths, and I live near the 606, and $100 million for an eastward extension of a bike trail could be nice, it is obscene to me that a city that has not finished the two feeder parks on the west end of the Bloomingdale Trail would talk about $100 million for the more affluent end of the trail. It's disgusting. Designated for the feeder parks on the west end, and they said, oh, we can't do that. We have no control over that. That's ridiculous. They get what they want from you. They should be asking for that from you the same way we will. Thank you.
So I'd like to respond to a bit one thing that you might mention. Over the last several years, the city has funded more than $150 million in park improvements across the city of Chicago. That's not a minimal amount of money. It's $150 million in new and existing park improvements. So I just want to correct one of the misconceptions out there that the city does not fund park space. But again, the meeting is entirely about the potential TIF designation and all the plan moving forward.
My name is Katie Tutton, and I'm one of the owners. I'm going to start with a very direct question. On December 11th, will you be calling this before the CDC? That's when the next meeting is. That's December the 11th. Will the TIF be called?
I'll get back to that if you want to finish.
No, I'll wait for the answer.
I don't know. I asked the team members to speak to the designation timeline, which is driven by state statute.
No, I'm well aware of that.
Yes, at least currently we're planning on introducing the plan to CDC on December 11th.
Okay, so I want to make sure everyone understands that the plan will be submitted on December the 11th. What time?
They're generally at 1 p.m. I need to, I'll look right now.
Yeah.
Generally at 1 p.m.
That'd be great.
I said no.
So, okay, I can go now. I love speech. I'm here today to ask for, we're here today to ask for responsible development, an investment that is this carefully, that this be carefully considered because it will have an enormous impact on our local communities and the entire city of Chicago for many years to come. That is why we are here to say, let's slow this down. Wait till we get the new mayor and city council in place, and there can be thoughtful, diligent, and that we can look at carefully balanced planning process that will take into consideration all the community's thoughts. We are not against responsible development. We just think we need more time. All I can think about is Mayor Daley's parking meter debacle. Every time I look in the mirror, I go, why didn't I do something? What was I doing? That I was too busy, I couldn't fight this. It's on our watch now. Now I'd like to say to Alderman Hopkins, thank you so much for bringing us the historical landmark. but you did it without even talking to us. I think it's a perfect example of how this process has been run. My husband is a teacher. And what I don't understand, and if you guys could explain this to me, I don't understand how you can determine how much the TIF is going to be when you don't have the plan from Sterling Bay. I understand there's a number of aldermen that haven't even seen it. So I understand how TIFs work. I don't understand front-end TIFs. That's a little out of my knowledge. But can you answer that question for me? How you came up with a number, a very precise number. So it's for infrastructure. Well, where are the pipes going? I mean, you must know that there's a building there, and right? Where the road's going. You know where the buildings are going to be. So is there, can we see the plan? What's the big secret?
So to answer your question, I'd ask Joanne Hamilton to see that, to chime in about costs related to the specific projects that we mentioned this evening.
No, but if you've seen Sterling Bay's plan, obviously you needed it to come up with the number, right?
I'm sorry. I apologize if I misunderstood your question. I thought your question was how did we come up with the costs associated with the projects that we mentioned this evening?
Correct. But do okay. Not like...
So I'll try to answer both parts of what I think is your question.
Okay.
So,
At this point, all of the costs that are shown are rough estimates based on assumptions that are made about feasibility of alignments. We have started doing studies of the feasibility of things like the Ashland-Elston Armitage intersection realignment, but we're at the early stages, so these are conceptual costs at this time.
And will they be finalized December 11th?
Are you talking about the cost, or are you talking about the amount that's being generated by the TIF? Those are two different things.
I guess I don't understand.
So as far as the cost that Luann mentioned, the projects at this point have not been vetted. The engineering hasn't been done. I believe as part of the CDOT process, if the bridges were placed or the bridges constructed, at that point they'll do their engineering, they'll cost it out. These are ballpark figures at this point based on the limited information that we have based on the needs. So obviously as we move forward over the next 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, the specific project will be costed at that point.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Alderman, would you consider waiting until the election of, after the election of 2019? It's a very simple, straightforward.
So I would answer that in two ways. One,
The Alderman, no disrespect.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
I said, Alderman, would you consider tabling this until after the election?
I can't speak at all, but I'll answer it on behalf of DPD.
Well, he's right there. He's not there.
No.
Where'd he go? Alderman. Sorry, my glasses are there. So he's not here.
Okay, so. I believe that. Hold on. I believe the Alderman just said he'd address that as part of his closing remarks.
Oh, good. Okay, cool. That's it.
So, and again, with Alderman.
Thank you. My name is Scott Nations. I've lived in the 43rd Ward since 1995. I'm supposed to ask a question, but something you guys have said begs a question. How in the world can you submit a plan when you do not know the scope or scale of what will be built, or the best you have are ballpark estimates? That would be my first question. My second question is really a statement. I've heard the 60-acre number repeatedly. And I will say that I consider it to be insultingly disingenuous. Somebody explained it this way. Much of the 60 acres that you discuss, that you mentioned repeatedly, will be literally 30 feet wide and 4,000 feet long. That's not usable open space. Somebody described it this way. That's much like being told, congratulations, you've won the lottery, and you're going to get $1 a year for 100 million years. The only place in here is there a public park. You talk about private space that we may or may not be able to use, much of which is an ill-considered, ill-conceived soccer stadium. So for Scott, for myself, I will say this. No park, no deal, no planning, no deal, no input, no deal. So my question is, how in the world can you submit the plan on the 11th of next month without knowing the scope or scale of what you need to plan for, or having anything more than ballpark estimates?
So the first part of your question, so again, it's a 23-year plan. The idea is to take the work of the North Branch Framework Plan, the effort that went into that over the course of the last few years, work with our planning folks, draft a plan that we work with Ameroni on, who came up with projections based on potential future land use, calculated over 23 years, and put together a framework for what we think will be needed over 23 years. We're not trying to tell you that we know exactly what the needs are going to be over 23 years. What we're trying to do is to put a mechanism in place to address the needs that we know exist today and needs that will arise in the future.
Well, then what are the needs that exist today? What are those going to cost? Because you say ballpark estimates and you say you know that you need this today. Well, there's a cognitive dissonance there. If you know that it's needed today, then how can you only have ballpark estimates? And how can you have ballpark estimates if you don't know the scope or scale of what Sterling Bay has planned?
Okay, so there's probably a half dozen questions in there, so I'll try to attack this in a different way. The cost for a bridge, I mean, this is your community. You live here, you work here, you play here, you know what the needs are. You know that the streets are congested. You know there's a need for additional bridges. That's what we've taken into consideration.
Let me finish.
I listened to your question. Let me try to answer.
We don't know until we know what Sterling Bay has planned.
Let me try to answer.
There's 140 acres of open space right now that they're going to build in. Now, if they were to build single-family homes on lots that are 25 by 125, that demands vastly different infrastructure than if they were to build three or four buildings of 75 stories. So how in the world can you come to a conclusion about what's needed?
The point I was trying to make is that based on the issues today, I don't know if Luann wants to weigh in on traffic issues in the community, which you're all well aware of. Based on issues today and issues that we anticipate in the future, because obviously there will be a development on site, based on that base level of needs, we know there's infrastructure improvements that will be critically necessary over the next 23 years. That's the base of the plan. It's a 23-year plan. This is a funding mechanism to address needs we know will arise over 23 years. Do we know what they are specifically today to the best of our ability? Yes, but we're trying to get in front of them.
Then that begs the next question. Why are we doing this backwards? Why don't we know what is going to happen there before we plan for what's needed?
So I think the simple answer to the question is we're trying to anticipate those needs and we're trying to plan for
why? There's no need to. All that does is inject tremendous risk into the process. All you're doing is injecting risk into the process for no good reason, except because you're in a hurry. I'll stop there, but the last sentence I uttered was a question. Would you please answer it?
I might have missed that. I apologize. I tried to answer your question the best I can. Obviously, the answer didn't suffice.
Why are you in a rush? When the process is backwards.
I would defer to our original statement when we opened the meeting. This has been going on for 2 years. This is part of the North Branch Framework Plan. Out of that plan, needs were identified as part of a lengthy community process that we've talked about at length this evening. That is the fundamental basis for the TIF plan that we're talking about tonight. And again, it's the TIF plan that we're talking about.
No plan, no agreement. No park, no agreement.
Scott, I was going to say this for later, but I've noticed that the room is kind of thinning out. So I do want to respond to Katie's question and also some of the points that you brought up. But first, Katie, the time frame that you saw presented here tonight, that's the Department of Planning's time frame. That's not mine. So I'm open to considering other options. Honestly, this is the first time as an alderman I've had to deal with a TIF issue. So this is actually new to me. This is the first time I've gone through the process. There are pre-existing TIFs that I inherited. Actually, the second ward probably has among the smaller concentrations of TIF geography out of any ward because, frankly, we don't really live in too much of a blighted neighborhood. I do want to point out, though, that the proposal that you're seeing tonight, as far as the actual dirt on the ground, the geography, 80% of what you saw presented tonight is already in a TIF. So we're really expanding it by only 20%. It's not a huge difference when you look at it that way. Nevertheless, this is something that does need a lot of study. It does need to be considered, and I'm willing to take all the time that's necessary, as I've said all along throughout this process. Scott, I hope you and Wendy will come to the meeting on the 29th because we're going to see some revised plans from Sterling Bay. I haven't seen them yet, but I understand they're making some revisions based on community input, and I think it would be reasonable to expect that we're going to see them address the open space and recreational space issue in a way that might satisfy some people who are currently not satisfied. They've heard time and time again at numerous meetings the cry for more open space and more recreational space, and no, the river doesn't count, and no, the soccer stadium doesn't count. They've heard that too. So let's see how effective they are in responding to that. That wasn't the purpose of tonight's meeting. So you're not seeing it because you weren't told it was going to be here. It will be present on the 29th. So please come back. This is not done. Far from it. We have many more things to deal with and many more questions to answer. So, Chip, you're back on the hot seat. Thank you.
I think we remember where we left off.
Yeah, that's it. Alright, hey, I'm David Mangwan. I'm a lecturer and instructor at the University of Chicago, and sometimes I work in the city as a software developer. I also do a number of light industrial projects, both as a volunteer and in my free time. I'm just curious as to why industry is seen as a way forward here, instead of something which kind of holds people back, holds them down. I think if you examine the history of the world, people tend to do a lot better in greener spaces which aren't highly structured or highly planned. I'm getting a lot of like camera photos. I actually consider the camera kind of a terrible, painful invention, but it's okay. You can take photos of me if you want. Also, someone was talking about like the 20-year plan or something. I think development should probably pay as you go. Every single project that passes through should be approved on a case-by-case basis. I think that if you look at industry cooperation with government, you're going to find a tremendous amount of waste. I used to work at the International Business Machines Corporation, and they charge the federal government $50,000 for an app that points left or right when you're trying to board an airplane. You can do that for 50 cents with a six-sided die. I don't know why anyone would care about that or pay that amount of money for that, and I don't think that the city of Chicago should be involved in it. I also think that if you're improving streets here, the streets are like really anti-human and out of date. Especially if you go to the Cortland Corridor, there's a place where the sidewalk is like this far up off the ground, and there's a piece of iron sticking out of it, and it drops directly to street level. When you talk about getting young people off the streets, you also need to get the streets off the young people. Like, it literally is like that. People need a human environment where, like, if they fall to the ground, they can get up without getting cut, and there's not going to be, like, oil spills or any of that. I think that if you want the city to be a habitable space, you need to keep industry out of the city. Same thing with the waterways. Like, there was a steel plant on the river. In reality, that steel plant should probably be pumping its waste into a salt dome deep underground instead of anywhere near the waterway so that it can't access the groundwater. I'm not a professional engineer, but I've researched it a lot. What's up? Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted someone to tell me why industry is, like, the idea and why you want to build more bike paths and stuff instead of allowing people to just find their way.
So I'll defer the question on the bike paths. I will say that one of the questions, closer questions earlier in your comment, any projects that we propose to
of fun will be brought back, will be vetted, will be presented. This is about presenting what we think will occur over 23 years again. Any deal will be brought back to the community.
Okay. I have also, like, interviewed with the Boeing Corporation, and there's a building in the Loop. As far as I know, the Loop is also a TIF, and the Boeing Corporation spoke with me for, like, an hour and a half about working on one of their projects and then decided never to speak to me again. So there are breaches of trust with these industries constantly, and the taxpayer puts the bill.
I would say we will take a couple more questions. We have to wrap up. I'll stick around for a few minutes to answer anyone that didn't get their questions addressed. We agreed to have the facility to 8 o'clock, so we're going to wrap up. I'll stick around, like I said, and we'll take two more questions, and the rest of the folks of mine, I'll come down and talk with you directly.
Thanks for shaking the hide up.
Hi, my name is Philip Medicine. I am the chairman of the zoning committee for the BCO, which is the Bug County Community Organization. We're here for a couple of reasons. Number one, it hasn't been said to me, but the reason why people in my community don't like TIFs is because if you look back 23 years and you think about what our taxes were in our neighborhood 23 years ago versus what they are today, there's been a huge increase. If you freeze the taxes for the area within the TIF, the city's costs increase over the entire course of the 23 years. Because the part that's going to the general fund is frozen, that means that increase in cost has to spread amongst everybody else. These taxes are not frozen. Okay? And that's something that is not really discussed, but that's why citizens get annoyed when more property is taken off the tax rolls, because it's frozen at that level for 23 years. And like I said, looking back, 23 years ago, our taxes in Bucktown were very low, not so today. So that's my statement. My question is, why can we not add a process into this process that allows you to show that you have incorporated community feedback into this plan? Because we in Bucktown believe that there are some valuable things up on this list. A lot of the infrastructure improvements, the mobility improvements, we think are very valuable. But there's no plan that we've seen up here for you guys to input our concerns, the concerns that were brought by this group. So can we add another step where you can put feedback in that shows us that community concerns have been listened to? And that is my question.
I'll talk to you directly after the meeting. I will say that the plan should reflect, and I believe it does reflect, the litany of meetings that took place related to the North Branch framework. They were incorporated. They were taken into consideration when the plan was drafted.
I understand that, but things like, you know, like Alan said, you know, some of those things that are on that list of your 10 to 15 should have been on the first list. You know, and those are the things, and that was not the level of detail we hit during those meetings for the North Branch plan, because I was at that. We didn't hit that level. It was not time to talk about the structure or the sequence of it. Now it is, and you've got to give us that right to input the information, especially with the parks. I mean, you've heard that. That's a huge issue. This is not enough. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Chip. I'll go and speak with them as soon as we're done with the last two questions. So I'll take your question, and I'll step down and speak with you.
Yes. My name is Paul Dickman. I'm on the Wicker Park Committee, and I have a question about the basic assumption of $800 million. By my guess, is that that would require a equalized assessed valuation of about $5.5 million per acre. Well, I could believe that someplace where they were assessed at 25% of value, this entire thing is an enterprise zone, and everybody who builds on vacant land is going to apply for Class 7 and be assessed at 10%. Frankly, I get half of the number that you people think you're going to get, and you've got $700 worth of improvements coming out of the budget that I don't think is going to fill out.
So is your question, you're thinking that...
My question is, have you considered the fact that this is all going to be assessed at 10%?
And Tim, if you want to address the question related to the calculations.
I mean, I think a more critical point is that I don't... Class 7 isn't under consideration for the property.
Yes, it is.
It's Class 7 is also... They need to require a letter of support from the Department of Planning, which is...
So you're going to refuse a letter of support?
Yes.
Okay. That's what we needed.
Hi, my name is Rita Kay, and I live in Lincoln Park in the 43rd Ward.
One, I get frustrated when I hear Eleanor Gorski say there's no city-owned space when you know you sold the city-owned space to Sterling Bay, and then you say you have no ability to take parkland for the citizens. It's, to me, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry. But the other thing I wanted to say, I know someone had questions about whether you saw Sterling Bay's plan, and I don't know, but I did a Freedom of Information request, and a May 4th email from Katie Janky Dale of DLA Piper, which I understand is the attorney or law firm that represents Sterling Bay in the zoning matters, and an email dated May 4th, 2018, titled Infrastructure Map, Phasing Costs. It says, "Hi, Sean." It's addressed to Sean Glowax, who we then forwarded to a number of members of DPD, including Eleanor Gorski. "Hi, Sean. Sorry for the delay on this. Please be attached. Again, this may change as the plans evolve. We're pulling together additional materials today that I will continue to send you as I'm providing them." And then those were forwarded to, I guess, a team at DPD to be discussed at forwarding the attached for discussion at today's meeting. I'm still trying to get the attached documents, which I'm working through the Attorney General Public Access Council, and I hope to have it soon. But I would just like to ask, did you see plans from Sterling Bay? Because that was a legitimate question that people asked. I got an email that seems to indicate you did, so why can't you just answer anyone's question, whether you saw plans?
So I apologize. I thought I answered the question. I tried to answer the question. I have not seen plans. We're in the business of projections, making projections based on what is a reasonable assumption about development. Reasonable assumption about development is density, what potential zoning could be. We use those projections and come up with calculations that will be reflected in the TIF plan.
Eleanor asked it, though, because Eleanor got the email, so I wanted to make sure she could answer the question.
Let me finish trying to respond to your question, and then I'll ask Eleanor if she has anything to add. So we do this all the time. There's 144 TIFs in the city. Every single one of the TIF plans is the same process. We go through, we try to project. It's a whole entire uphill battle to try to reasonably project what's going to happen on each individual parcel with that TIF over 23 years, and then account for the timing that the development will take place, and back into a number that yields the dollar amount that we think will be created. It's an impossible task, but we undertake that task with each one of the 144 existing TIFs. We did that here based on our in-house projections. So I think I've answered your question.
I've already explained it. Yeah.
I don't know if you have anything to add, otherwise we'll take the last question.
There's only four of us left. I mean,
okay, then can you please be brief? I apologize. I'll talk to you as long as you can talk. But we said we'd be on this room.
Yes, we have seen Sterling Bay's plans. Those were filed with the City Council, I believe, in either May or June. And as soon as plans are filed with City Council, they begin meetings with city staff to talk about all the things that we've been talking about today's meeting. The buildings, the density, and then they come and start community meetings in the respective communities. We probably have 50 to 100 development plans that are now being reviewed and studied with city staff and going to community meetings throughout the city.
I think I'm next.
Please. Oh,
hi, my name is Marceline Cole.
Hi.
I work at The Hideout, and I also help lead a group that works with other community groups in the city. It's called the Socially Engaged Yoga Network. I just want to be very clear that just because at the start of this meeting, in a very cute publicity way, you agreed to designate the Hideout as an historical landmark, which we very much appreciate, don't think for one second that means that the Hideout will acquiesce or be happy with pushing through this ridiculous, unfair, oversized BS plan that is happening. And to say that there's no public land involved when you make huge public land sales and thousands of dollars, maybe millions of that, went to help fund the police, the $95 million police academy that they're planning to build on the west side when we need money. money for schools and infrastructure on the west and south sides in Chicago. If you think that the Hideout is representing only one small building that you agreed to save, you underestimated us. If you think that the Hideout is just that small building, the Hideout represents and cares about much more than just our building and who works there and who goes there. And we care about the south and west sides in our city, and we care about black and brown people in our city, and we want to fight for that, and we encourage everyone here to do the same, and please keep showing up and delay the tip.
All the comments made tonight have been excellent, and this has been a very fruitful dialogue, I think. My name is Mark Foskin from the 32nd Ward. A few thoughts. My sense, having observed this dialogue and having been to the previous community meeting, I think this has all been approached quite wrongly. Many of the proposed infrastructure improvements will be necessary in order to make Sterling Bay's development viable, regardless of whether taxpayer funds are committed to help to cover the costs. As some have pointed out, TIF funding is meant to attract development. This conversation would be very different if Sterling Bay was not in the picture, but they are. So we as taxpayers should approach this as a negotiation with them. Why don't we see what they are willing to promise, black on white, before we make a big promise to them?
We have a promise to make to them. This is the first step in the process. Every deal that comes in the door, every request for infrastructure funds, every request for TIF, we want to be part of.